Matt Wetroba there, our Live Music Friday guest today. Matt's been singing, playing guitar, writing songs for years. The Detroit Free Press wrote of Matt's music, "This is what folk should be." So we're delighted to have Matt with us. He's been performing all over the state for many, many years in a wide variety of venues and has hosted Folk Alley, a program which airs on WKAR here every Sunday evening at 6. So more from Matt Wetroba coming up here on a Live Music Friday. I'm Mark Bayshore. We're glad you could join us today. Current State's Month in Review segment for July includes the reversal of a ban on straight ticket voting in Michigan, reports of substandard conditions at a women's prison in Ypsilanti, and a quick look back at two closely watched nominating conventions. Joining me to review and update those and other stories is the Detroit Free Press reporter Paul Egan. Paul, good to see you.
Good morning, Mark.
We had the Detroit News, Chad Live and Good, all set to go here with us today. But late yesterday, Chad had to bow out because of the story that you and I need to talk about here first. And this is the planned news conference by Attorney General Bill Schuette today at the University of Michigan in Flint, announcing more criminal charges relating to the Flint water crisis. Paul, you broke the Free Press's coverage of this planned news conference. Is there anything you've learned since yesterday about this?
Nothing that's firm enough to report yet, Mark. We just know that Schuette promised there would be more criminal charges when he announced the original charges, and he is going to be filing those today in Genesee County Court.
And this is scheduled for 11:30, as I recall, at the University of Michigan, Flint, so that's going to get some heavy coverage, I'm sure. This is the second round of criminal charges. Remind our listeners of the two rounds of charges brought already.
Right. First, the Attorney General brought criminal charges in April against two Michigan Department of Environmental Quality employees and one City of Flint employee. And these range from misdemeanors to five-year felonies. Charges were somewhat controversial. A number of attorneys say that it could be a hard time getting some of these charges to stick. There's controversy about whether we have, you know, some medium to low level public employees being charged for essentially trying to do their job when perhaps there are higher ups that maybe are greater to blame. There's also some question whether, as horrible as this tragedy is, we're ever really going to find criminal liability in this case. But basically, they're charged with a number of charges, including conspiracy to tamper with evidence, tampering with evidence, official misconduct, and in one case, basically a violation of saying that the Flint water treatment plant was safe to operate when in fact it wasn't.
We've had one round of criminal charges and one round of civil charges as well. So today's charges apparently fall into the criminal category. We shall just have to wait and see how that unfolds here later today. 2 weeks, two major nominating conventions. Now, you did not report directly from either Philadelphia or Cleveland, but you report on politics often. I know you keep an eye on this. I'd like to hear your takeaway from the Democratic convention, which just wrapped up last night.
They are definitely certainly more pumped up leaving the convention than they were arriving at it, Mark. And, you know, it's interesting, as much as there are contrasts between sharp contrasts between those two conventions, there's one similarity that comes through in that in both conventions, for a large part of the party base and you know, party members more generally, it's a case where they're not so much in love with their candidate as determined not that the country can't afford to have the opponent's candidate elected.
Both are pursuing unity, and it seems pretty elusive, or it has been pretty elusive, for both parties. I would say post-convention, it would appear The Republicans have a bigger challenge than the Democrats do in terms of staying together, but the both parties seem to be dealing with pretty serious stress fractures, I guess, for lack of a better phrase right now.
Absolutely true, Mark, and Michigan played a pretty significant part in both of those fractures. In the Republican convention, you had Wendy Day, a prominent Michigan Republican who was one of the leaders of the Never Trump movement. Really, she worked very hard for to try to push the push Ted Cruz even beyond when it looked impossible after they wouldn't change the party rules. And of course, on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders actually won Michigan, and there were many members of the Michigan delegation that were among the most diehard Bernie Sanders supporters.
Well, he took the primary, of course. How do you have a feeling you were not in Philadelphia? We'll make that clear. But how is it? Do you have an impression as to how unified Michigan Democrats are behind Hillary Clinton here? Right now?
You know, it's sometimes hard to correlate what you see at the convention with the electorate more generally. But I do think they're leaving the convention relatively unified. Certainly Sanders did everything he could to try to give strong endorsement to Hillary Clinton. You know, the real question is going to be, what is the enthusiasm level of voters in both parties? And this campaign is really just going to start getting going, perhaps even really around Labor Day. And this could be such a negative, really divisive campaign that many people think it may drive down turnout on both sides. Mm.
Politics completely aside, I have to give the Democrats pretty high marks for the optics of their convention. It was, I think, a pretty impressive gathering, which worked very, very hard to put these stress fractures in the background. And it appears to me Tim Kaine would appear to be quite the guy to resolve, maybe address some of these divisive issues. Does he strike you that way?
Certainly, a very, very much kind of a genial, everyday type of guy that really puts people at ease. I thought he was particularly strong, not so much at the convention, but at the Clinton announcement of him as a running mate on the weekend. And you're right in that there was such a sharp contrast between the high-profile people that were prepared to come out and speak for Hillary Clinton as opposed to what the Republicans were able to bring out in support of Donald Trump. And certainly even had, you know, a prominent Republican like Michael Bloomberg coming out and speaking at the Democratic convention. Very unusual.
We had a short film about the Flint water crisis that aired in Philadelphia. Mayor Karen Weaver also appeared there. In Cleveland, we did have Michigan Attorney General Bill Schuette taking the stage, talking about justice for Flint. Let's pivot to Philadelphia briefly. Any particular takeaways from the Republican gathering?
As far as Flint?
I pivoted to Philadelphia. I want to pivot to Cleveland there. Any particular thoughts on the Republican convention?
Just in terms of Flint or in general?
In general.
The convention started off more divided probably than it ended. Ted Cruz's speech where he did not endorse Donald Trump, although there were expectations that he might, and told the convention attendees to vote their conscience. That certainly created a lot of controversy at the convention. You saw Cruz almost booed off the stage, and certainly that party remains very divided.
And any thoughts on how unified, I'll ask you the same question that I asked you regarding the Democrats about the Republicans, how unified do you feel Michigan Republicans are behind Donald Trump?
I think they're divided. I mean, there are many that are basically taking the position, this is not my first choice, but I'm going to support the nominee. Mm. We can't have Hillary Clinton elected president. That's kind of going back to where we started. There are many Republicans that, as much as they're not enamored of Donald Trump, believe that a Hillary Clinton presidency would be worse. But there are also, you know, there are also Republicans that are enthused about him in Michigan, and there are also others that that are not going to support him under any circumstances. And there are Republicans who basically have said they're going to leave the presidential ballot blank when they go to the polls.
Paul Egan of the Detroit Free Press is with us on Current State's July Month in Review. I'm Mark Bayshore. We'll point out we know of two presidential polls that were held here in Michigan in July. Both showed Hillary Clinton leading Donald Trump. Steve Mitchell of Mitchell Research showing a 7 percentage point lead for the former Secretary of State in a poll. This was before the convention, so this goes back a few weeks. But Lansing's Marketing Resource Group showing a 5 point Clinton lead more recently. You're a reporter, not an odds maker, but if the election were held today, who do you think would take Michigan?
Well, yeah, I'm really not an odds maker, but I guess based on the polls and based on the fact that no Republican has won Michigan in a presidential election since 1988, I would have to say that Hillary Clinton is the favorite right now.
Going to be so interesting to see how this unfolds in our state between now and November.
Also, Mark, I don't want to interrupt, but you know, we have been talking about the Schutte announcement coming later today, and we do just have some confirmation of what the Attorney General is okay. going to do today. If we might be able to break a little news, but the Free Press is about to report that 6 state employees will be charged by the Attorney General, 3 from the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, and 3 from the Department of Health and Human Services.
These are criminal charges again.
Yes, they are. And we'll have to, I think we'll have to wait for more details on that. But that's the latest on the announcement that's coming at 11:30 today.
Okay, so Paul Egan's newspaper about to report, the Detroit Free Press about to report, 3 employees of the Department of Environmental Quality and 3 employees of the Department of Health and Human Services about to be charged criminally here by the state. We will learn more about that here in the coming hours. Let's shift gears here. Michigan's ban on straight ticket voting that Governor Snyder signed into law in January was stopped by a federal judge in Detroit just last week. This is Judge Gershwin Drain. What was Judge Drain's reasoning here?
Judge Drain said that the ban on straight ticket voting would be very disadvantageous to voters in large cities and particularly to black voters, and that therefore it was unconstitutional.
And the reasoning behind the ban was what? How did Governor Snyder and other supporters of the ban defend it?
The basic argument from the Republicans is that people should make an educated choice based on the candidate, not just on the party, and that that basically it was more a better example of civic engagement to go down the ballot and check each name rather than make a single mark and go the straight ticket. Of course, part of the context to that is that despite the fact that the Republicans have been able to pretty much sweep the table in Michigan in the last couple of elections, from the governor's office right down to the legislature, the House and the Senate, where they have not been successful is on the items at the very bottom of the ballot, such as the State Board of Education, university trustee jobs. The Democrats have still been more successful in those areas, and the critique of the Republican position is that really what they're trying to do is reverse that effect, because the statistics show that Democrats tend to vote the straight ticket more than Republicans do in Michigan.
Is there any indication that either the Secretary of State or the Attorney General will appeal Judge Drain's ruling?
Yes, the Attorney General, I believe, has already filed an appeal, so this will be taken up by the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in Cincinnati. You know, the Attorney General is basically saying that it can't be unconstitutionally disadvantageous because people still, you know, have the right to vote for whoever they want to. Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing that's important to mention is that even many Republicans that supported this legislation wanted it coupled with any reason absentee voting, which, you know, which would have the effect of reducing lines for people to vote, which is a concern in the big cities. If you have no straight ticket voting, it's going to take longer for each person to vote. The lines get longer. So you had people like Lisa Posthumous Lyons, who was a sponsor of this this legislation, she would no longer support it once the legislature would not pass the any reason absentee voting to go with it. It was, for many Republicans, saw this as a package that should have gone together. Even the governor supported it that way, although he did sign this bill in isolation.
Paul Egan of the Detroit Free Press here on Current State's Month in Review on WKAR. You wrote some compelling stories this month about the conditions at the Huron Valley Correctional Facility. This is a women's prison with more than 2,000 inmates in Ypsilanti. You wrote about the conditions there, not just for the inmates, but for employees as well. Talk to us about the conditions there for the inmates first. What's going on there?
Yes, Mark. And we are actually going to have some more on this story coming this weekend. But basically, what's really unique about the women's prison, as opposed to, we have over 30 men's prisons in Michigan, we only have one women's prison. So there's nowhere else to put a woman. You have every level of security there. You also have what they call the boot camp for women is there. When you think about it, you know, think about even transporting people for court. People have cases in counties all around Michigan, and yet they're only housed in this unit in Ypsilanti. So that creates unique challenges as well. But the bottom line is they've converted day rooms, TV rooms, offices into cells for women. There are complaints that there's a lack of ventilation. They, in one case, restricted access to the day rooms because too many women were wanting out of their cells at the same time. It affects programming. Many of these women need to complete certain programs in order to get parole. Because there's so many inmates, they can't get into these programs. That then delays parole and aggravates the overcrowding problem. So there's a number of issues. Leaking roofs is another one that we just reported on, that there's been frequent cases where they've had to have buckets under the ceilings in various places. In the prison, there's reports that it's creating black mold, mildew, other issues that are health threats. And you know, the one former corrections officer said it, you know, there was a case where it even shorted out the lights, the water leaking through the light fixtures, although the department did deny that particular claim.
There are also what appear to be substandard conditions for workers there as well. In the time that we've got left, Paul, just talk to us about how state – you did have input from state corrections officials and spokesmen in your stories. How are they responding to these conditions? What did they tell you?
Basically, you know, there's some history here in that we had a real problem of male corrections officers – not all, certainly, but some — abusing female inmates at these prisons. So what they did was they basically said, no more male corrections officers. Then they didn't have enough female corrections officers. And that's the reason they've had to have this forced overtime for so many women. Basically, the state is saying they're doing the best they can to try to hire more qualified female corrections officers, but that because this facility has to be staffed 24/7, when — you know, they admit they are forcing women to work overtime because they basically don't have any choice, they say.
We will point out again the news that we've received here during our segment with Paul Egan of the Detroit Free Press, his newspaper, reports that Attorney General Bill Schuette will bring criminal charges against three employees of Michigan's Department of Environmental Quality and three employees of Michigan's Department of Health and Human Services. Criminal charges here forthcoming in Flint today. We will learn more throughout the course of the day. For now, we want to thank the Detroit Free Press's Paul Egan for joining us on Month in Review. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Ours is a simple faith. Life is a short embrace. Heaven is in this place every day. Hope is the ground we till. Make each day what you will. Thankful for dreams fulfilled. Every day, no room in this heart for fear, no judgment day drawing near. Trust that inner voice you hear every day. Life's not a goal or race. It's about heart and faith and living a life of grace every day. Ours is a simple faith. Life is a short embrace. Heaven is in this place. Every day, hope is the ground we till. Make each day what you will. Thankful for dreams fulfilled. Every day, trust is an open hand. Making an honest stand, rooted here in this land, every day. Live in the mystery, seeking the harmony here between you and me, every day. Is a simple faith. Life is a short embrace. Heaven is in this place every day. Hope is the ground we till. Make each day what you will. Thankful for dreams fulfilled. Every day, ours is a simple faith. Life is a short embrace. Heaven is in this place. Every day, hope is the ground we till. Make each day what you will. Thankful for dreams fulfilled every day.
Well, what a heartfelt message there. Really nice. It's called Simple Faith. Matt Wotroba performing live in Studio S here on WKAR's Live Music Friday. Matt performs tonight and tomorrow in Everett, Michigan. We all know where Everett is, right? On the way up north, or it is up north, I guess. We're going to talk and hear more music from Matt Wotroba coming up here in just a little bit on a Live Music Friday here on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. There are summer camps going on all over Michigan, but one in East Lansing doesn't involve any tents or mosquito spray. Current State's Brooke Allen says this one involves a lot of singing and dancing at the Wharton Center.
Wharton Center's Take It From the Top is in its seventh year teaching kids to sing, dance, and act, but that isn't all. Paul Kanan is a Broadway veteran and the executive director of Take It From the Top. Paul says the camp is composed of everything he wishes he knew when he was starting out.
I think I never had something like this. I knew what I wanted to do, but I didn't know how to get there. And I never had mentors kind of teaching me the road to Broadway, to sing and dance and act. And is there a paycheck in there? Like, what's the living like? And there just wasn't a lot of how-to, you know, stuff. So I was like, I've done this now for like 15 years professionally. I should be reaching out and helping a younger generation. And even if they don't go into it professionally, I think arts education in today's world is important for confidence and public speaking and just your life in general. I think it makes better human beings that are richer in spirit.
So let me ask you this. As far as, you know, they always say, obviously you're doing, so this doesn't apply to you. But the people who always say, oh, well, if you, you know, obviously if you can't do it, you teach.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Well, we're all still doing. Like, all the faculty I bring are literally, like, Courtney Wolfson, who's with us, she left Kinky Boots 2 nights ago, was her last night. Curtis is going into SpongeBob that's coming to Broadway. So we're all still working in the business. Most of my people are not really given up quite yet. Including me. I mean, I kind of take time off. I do this with my summers, but I'm still working in New York professionally a lot.
So what do you say to the older actor out there? I mean, these are kids.
Yeah.
They're young. So what do you say to the older actor out there who may be discouraged and just say, you know what, I'm giving up? What do you say to them?
I mean, it's individual paths. There's people who, I don't think there's a giving up. I just think there's doing other. And if you're a happy person, hopefully you'll be happy doing something else. And if you're an unhappy person, I would say try to do something that makes you happy. But it's a passion-driven, dream-based career, and it doesn't always work out for everybody. Not everyone gets to do the same thing, which is why I say you don't have to be in New York to be happy performing. You can do community theater, you can be a good audience member, you can teach. Like, there's the same fulfilling artistic expression in a lot of different ways. I think people hold this standard of like New York and Broadway and movies and film and television, like, I'm not gonna be happy till I get there. But the truth is, art is everywhere. So I say enjoy it wherever you can.
So for the kid who has no confidence and the parent who might be saying, you know what, I have to sign them up for baseball or soccer or something like that, but the kid really wants to do acting or ballet, and it might be a boy. What do you say to that?
Let them do what they want to do. I mean, kids will tell you pretty much what they want to do. I think it's more destructive to push a child in a direction they don't want to go, that you want them to go in, than listen to what they really want to do. I mean, especially if it's a boy that wants to dance and sing, I would like feel that out, see where it goes. And, you know, there's plenty of different careers in this, in the business of the arts. There's management, there's all these different types of things, which is what we introduce as well. We kind of do beginning level stuff, and we do kind of professional development stuff. I bring out casting directors, and we talk about headshots, resumes, college. Once if you really want to go into this, you can learn about how it works. And if you don't, you have fun here for the week and you perform in the show, and it's a good time.
So what do you hear when kids are leaving the program at the end of the showcase? What's the most resounding thing you hear them say?
They're going to miss me the most. No, it's funny. They're quiet at the beginning. They're all like a little nervous about how it's going to go. And by the end, we can't get them to shut up because they're just excited and loud. And we've given them so many things to chew on, dance-wise and singing-wise and acting-wise. And, I mean, you can hear them in the background. They're a bunch of crazies. But I hope they go back to that. We're not here to say do something different than what your teachers and your arts programs are already telling you. We're here to add on to their experience in life in general, but also their kind of journey with art. So hopefully they learn something and take a risk, a positive risk. If they don't dance a lot, hopefully they're learning something about dance. If they don't sing a lot, hopefully they're gaining confidence getting in front of people to sing. And they can take that back to their school or their sports program or their family or their community or their church or, you know, wherever they're getting in front of people and being a person, I hope they can do it with a little more confidence.
So what does it do for you as a person and as an artist?
Well, That's a good question, because when you do 8 shows a week on Broadway, which I've done for the last 15 years, it gets a little dull and boring, and you do the exact same thing every single night. I was in Kinky Boots for 3 years, 8 shows a week. I was in Legally Blonde for 2 years. So when it's so refreshing for me to come work with all these different material, different kids at different stages of life. They have so much more passion, I think, than a lot of people that have been doing this for a long time professionally, honestly. So it's really refreshing. We sit down and talk about them at the end of the day, all of my faculty, and everyone has an inspiring story. We laugh together about it. So it's a huge reboot for us artistically, I think, because they inspire us. Like, I'm not here to say I'm better than you. Like, we're actually doing this together because I was you. When I was a kid, all I wanted to do was perform and be on stage. So I relate to that kid that wants to do that.
This is 12-year-old Isabella's third year attending Take It From the Top, and she has every intention of making it her career. But if she were on Broadway today, she knows exactly what role she would like to play.
If I was on Broadway right now, I would want to be on Matilda. If I was older, then I would want to be on Kinky Boots, and I really love Matilda, too.
Yeah. So when you were younger, did you always want to be an actress, or is this something that has always just started?
Ever since I was 5, I knew what I wanted to be.
And how about your parents? Are they supportive?
They're very supportive. They do everything they can to help me improve with my dancing, my acting, and my singing.
How tough do you think it is to be a professional actor?
It's pretty hard because you have to put a lot of work and time into it, and you have to make sure that you're really passionate about it.
Isabella went on to tell me that she plans to move to New York City when she turns 18, attend college, and go on many auditions. And along with auditioning, she says she will probably wait on many tables, but that she won't mind because, after all, isn't that how many of the greats got their starts? The preteen and teen recital is at 7 o'clock tonight. The advanced and junior advanced recital is Saturday at 1 o'clock. For Current State, I'm Brooke Allen.
I want to fly.
And we'll remind everybody that Wharton Center is an underwriter of WKAR Radio. Well, Matt Wetroba of Plymouth, Michigan is our Live Music Friday guest here today. Matt's been singing, playing guitar, and writing songs for many years. He performs this weekend in Everett, Michigan at the Everett Folk Festival, and he's hosted the program. A lot of you have heard on WKAR. You've heard Matt already here as host of Folk Alley, which is heard Sundays at 6 p.m. here on WKAR-FM. Set this next song up here for us, Matt. This has got a little bit of relevance here to those of us in Michigan.
The song I'm about to play?
Yes.
And let me just first say, the song I played just before that was written by my dear friend David Tamulevich from a duo called Mustard Retreat. Ours is a Simple Faith is a song I think of as just like a Michigan folk song.
So
I think
warm. That was really, really well done. Yeah.
Well, you know, it was actually quite a few years ago. I was driving home from my old stomping grounds on Saturdays at Detroit Public Radio. I was, instead of getting on the freeway, I decided to drive down Michigan Avenue and sort of wave hello to my dilapidating friend that used to sit on the corner of Michigan Avenue in Trumbull. Many, many, many years of great memories going to Tiger Stadium. And I have to explain this as I travel around the country, that in most places, you know, when a stadium goes down, they take it down and build something right away. Mm-hmm. But, of course, that's not the way we roll down in Detroit. It sat there, as we know, for six
right.
or 7 years. So as I looked at that stadium, I thought to myself, they used to play baseball here, and that's kind of where that song came from. And it's had an amazing journey since I sat down and wrote this little ode to the corner.
Well, we will hear more about its journey here after we hear the song.
Would you like to hear that now?
Here's Matt Wetroba on Live Music Friday.
I drive on through the broken gate, past the booth now still and dark, where once the cars were bathed in light spilling over from the park. I'd flip my keys to Jim or Steve, find my seat and have a beer. But this old house is coming down, they used to play baseball here. The stadium has moved downtown, leaving nothing on the street. They traded in a neighborhood for a corporate box or suite. I know it's good for business, that point has been made clear. This old house is coming down. Used to play baseball here. On game days, we would stand outside in a line curled round the block. But Gracie's eggs were worth the wait, and I loved the baseball talk. I'd marvel how the morning hours somehow disappear. But Gracie's place is coming down. They used to serve breakfast here. The new joint's out on exit 5. You don't have to stand in line. They traded conversation for a convenient place to dine. I know it's good for business. That point has been made clear. But this old house is coming down. They used to play baseball here. I know we're moving forward, and I guess we probably should. But there's a cost for what we've lost when things are gone for good. The barber shop near Gracie's was a gathering for guys. Between innings on the radio, they spent hours spinning lies. A ring of smoke, a dirty joke, for over 40 years. Now Saturdays are not the same, they used to give haircuts here. The new salon stretch on and on, Walt's place was cramped and small. They traded in a gathering place for a cheap cut at the mall. I know it's good for business. That point has been made clear. But Saturdays are not the same. They used to play baseball here. And this old house is coming down. They used to play baseball here.
They used to play baseball here. What else can that be about? Well, I suppose that could be about a few other places besides Tiger Stadium, Michigan, and Trumbull.
I don't mention Tiger Stadium in the song, so when I play this song in Boston or Chicago or any other place, they assume it's about their place.
It travels well, unfortunately. Well, you have particular. I can't let that go by and not talk about or stir up a few memories of Tiger Stadium. How old were you when you attended your first game? Well do you remember that?
You know, it was right around the 68 World Series, so okay. That was such an electrifying year.
Oh, wow.
And I was a 7-year-old or 8-year-old, something like that.
Yeah.
And so that just memories of with my dad more than anything.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
still very much
sure.
alive. We now watch all the games together on TV. He doesn't make it down to the stadium anymore. But yeah, I think it was right around the, kind of in that 68 era is
okay.
when I started going.
That was
down
a great time to get on board.
No doubt about it. Willie Horton was my man.
Oh, yeah. Number 23, and he's still alive and well.
Yep.
I've got a few years on you, but my first year game was 60 or 61. And they used to do a stadium edition of the newspapers. They may have stopped that. That was when the Detroit Times was still being mm-hmm. published. So I'm dating myself quite notably here. And your last game, do you remember the last game you attended at Tiger Stadium?
I went to the last game.
Oh, you did?
Yep.
Oh, really? I was there for the last home stand. I was about the second or third to the end of 99.
And, I try to make it clear in that song, I don't have anything against Comerica Park. It's a great place to see a baseball game.
That was my next question. How do you feel about Comerica?
Yeah, it's fine. It just doesn't have the neighborhood feel. And that's kind of what I wanted to bring out in that song, is that it just doesn't have that same sort of, the woman who used to cut roses where we parked and from her backyard and give them, to the customers as, that kind of neighborhood feel is what's missing.
How long did it take you to assemble those words? Because you really told quite a story there with
that
song.
Yeah, that's a tricky thing because I got the idea very clearly in my head in the title. And then I would say over a process of about 3 days of assembling and then about 3 months of editing.
Oh.
Because to me, songwriting is all about the editing.
You describe yourself as a community singer, and I'd never heard the phrase before until I saw it on your website. Describe for our listeners what you think, what What you are. What is a community
singer? I'll be happy to. You know, a few years ago in my radio role as a radio host, I got the chance to interview the great Pete Seeger one-on-one in his hometown of Beacon, New York. And Pete told me at this time that he was 89 at the time. And he told me that it was never his intention to put a song in people's ears, that his life's work was about putting a song on people's lips. And he said, we need to remind people that this music and this singing is way too important to leave to the professionals. So taking the inspiration from people like Lansing's own Sally Potter, who does that wonderful singing festival, I've taken it upon myself to sort of go across the country and teach people how to bring singing back into their lives at all different levels. And that's really been a big part of my work lately.
And you've performed here in East Lansing for the Midwinter Community Sing of Sally's.
And for Ten Pound Fiddle and lots of other things. But the work that Sally does with the Midwinter Singing Festival is astounding. It's just great.
And you help communities organize community sings as
That's
well,
right.
I'm
so
told.
The idea is to either inspire or facilitate. So I facilitate a bunch of them locally, but I also travel around the country and get people to start them on their own. I give them a model on how to do it, and my hope is like Johnny Songseed or something, that they will keep that tradition going. And that's kind of like my way of carrying on my hero's work.
You're going to perform in Everett, Michigan tonight and Saturday, a little town west of Clare, Michigan. What can you tell us about their gathering?
It's a beautiful tradition we've been doing now for, I think, 12 or 13 years, and I've been a part of it every time. It's a free festival, including some really wonderful folks from all over the country. My good friend Ann Hills is a wonderful singer from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. She'll be there. My good friends Peter and Lou Berryman from Madison, Wisconsin, two of the funniest songwriters I've ever heard. We've got Sherry Kane and Dave Steele. It's just going to be it's a great free festival. If you hate crowds, you're in luck. It's never very crowded. It's always just a very accessible little free all-day festival. Friday night, we do a community sing together. So if you want to see what that's all about, join us tonight, and tomorrow we'll be doing the concert starting at 1.
That sounds great. The Everett Folk Festival tonight and Saturday, including our special guest here on Live Music Friday, Matt Watroba. You've got a song called How Will I Leave that we're going to hear now.
You ready for that one now?
We are.
All right.
We'll shoot the breeze a little bit more when you're done with this.
This is a song that I wrote this. You asked me about my process of writing. This one, the idea for this song came about 10 years before I started writing songs. I started writing songs pretty late in life. And it happened at my grandmother's funeral. It was one of these great celebrations of life. She lived to be an older woman. And this is a song that I wrote based on the love in the room I was the folk singer at the funeral. I'll build from the lessons I learned in my youth. How will I leave? And open my eyes and my heart to the truth. That's how I'll leave this earth. How will I leave? How will I leave this earth? When it comes my time to go, how will they measure my worth? I will live on in those that I touched while I lived. In this journey of life from my death to my birth, that's how I'll leave this earth. It's choice and not chance that has brought me along. How will I leave? And showed me the difference between right and wrong. That's how I'll leave this earth. How will I leave? How will I leave this earth? When it comes my time to go, how will they measure my worth? I will live on, and those that I touched while I lived. In this journey of life from my death to my birth, that's how I'll leave this earth. Some say we'll live on up in heaven above. How will I leave?
I will live on through the ones that I loved. That's how I'll leave this earth. How will I leave? How will I leave this earth? When it comes my time to go, how will they measure my worth? I will live on in those that I touched while I live. In this journey of a life from my death to my birth, that's how I'll leave this earth. In this journey of a life from my death to my birth, that's how I'll leave this earth.
Matt Wotroba there live. How Will I Leave is the song here on WKAR's Live Music Friday. With your background in radio, Matt, you hosted Folk Alley for a spell. You continue to host a program on WDET. Talk to us about your radio life here a little bit.
Well, currently it's not happening, actually. The WDET ended a few years back, and that's when I ended up going over to Kent, Ohio to work at WKSU. But I started the Folks Like Us program back in 1986, and it ended right around 2008. So we had a nice long run of doing every Saturday 3-hour folk music show, which was couched right in between the Reverend Robert Jones, who you've had on as a guest.
He did
a show called Blues from the Lowlands before mine, and the late Larry McDaniel did a 2-hour bluegrass show. So we had 7 straight hours of American acoustic roots music on Saturday afternoon, and that became one of the most popular blocks of time on Detroit Public Radio. But like all things, things do come to an end, and that was a wonderful, wonderful run. Got to meet Robert Jones out of that.
How important is radio to the viability of folk music right now, would you say?
Well, that's a big conversation because radio, the whole scope of radio has changed now that there's streaming and there's all these different ways to hear radio. But getting the music out to people in any way possible, whether it be through broadcast radio or podcasts or whatever the new way to do it, has always been an extremely important way. Although I must say for me, it's as this kind of moniker of community singer, nothing beats getting out there and singing for a live audience. That is absolutely my favorite thing to do.
Well, Prairie Home Companion, of course, has meant a lot to the promotion of folk music for many years. What are your thoughts on the retirement of Garrison Keillor and about the show's next host, Chris Thiele?
Well, Chris Thiele is, an absolute genius when it comes to playing the mandolin. I heard only one show that he hosted, and he had some wonderful guests. I have a feeling it's just going to be fine. I was, such a fan of A Prairie Home Companion, especially in its heyday, that if I wasn't gigging, I was laying on my bed with the lights out on Saturday listening to all 2 hours, listening to Robin and Linda Williams and Peter Ostrushko and all these wonderful artists Greg Brown, people who I got introduced through Garrison. And, Garrison did so much for lots of things that I love, folk music and public radio.
You appear to be immersed in folk music, but you must like other kinds of music.
Oh, yeah. I've become an avid vinyl collector, and my favorite kind of old vinyl records to collect actually is jazz from the 50s and 60s.
Okay.
I love that stuff. I love classical music. The truth is, Mark, I am a proponent of the arts. I like to be around people who create things all the time. To me, it's what makes life worth living.
You're a charter member of the board of directors of the ARC in Ann Arbor. That has been a focal point for so much great music for so many years here in Michigan. Talk to us. What do you think makes the ARC so special?
Well, I think what makes the ARC special is how it has always treated performers with such respect and dignity. And that is why I think they have for 50 years now have been bringing concerts. The ARC actually has concerts usually 7 nights a week, and there's just not too many places, if any other place I know of, a listening room like that in the country that has listening concerts 6 or 7 nights out of the week. The ARC has just been an amazing institution, much like, but on a smaller level, the 10-pound fiddle here in East Lansing. Mm-hmm. They very much kind of feed off of each other. The 10-pound fiddle, of course, only on Friday nights, but the same kind of music.
We are going to have you play us out after I inform our listeners a little bit about our program scheduled for Monday. Coming up Monday on Current State, Eric Schneidewind of Lansing is the new national president of the AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons. Current State Scott Pohl talks with Mr. Schneidewind about the nation's leading lobbying group for the 50-plus crowd, Social Security, and other issues facing older Americans. Also, we talk Ingham County issues and politics with Penelope Cernglou here of the Ingham County Board of Commissioners. We'll take a particular focus in a minute to talk about the ballot, the millage proposal here for an animal shelter here, upgrade of an animal shelter here in Ingham County, and other issues as well with Penelope Cernglou. We hope you can join us then. We hope everybody has a great weekend. And Matt Wetroba plays us out here on Current State. Matt, great to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate the work you do here and everybody at WKAR. So what I'm going to take you out with is this very familiar Woody Guthrie song, in hopes that as you drive, wherever you are, you'll, guess what, sing along with me. This land is your land, and this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went walking that ribbon of highway, saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. Let's sing now, Lansing and East Lansing. This land is your land, and this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for